We start our program today with a focus on federal government websites, what federal government sites are doing to protect the privacy of people who come to visit them and request information. And to talk about that subject is Alyssa Cooper. She is the chief computer scientist at the Center for Democracy and Technology. And Ms. Cooper, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
The report that your organization has put out in conjunction with the Electronic Frontier Foundation is called Open Recommendations for the Use of Web Measurement Tools on Federal Government Websites. Tell me about the genesis of this project, why you wanted to measure this and make some recommendations.
Sure. So ever since President Obama took office earlier this year, from the very beginning, he pledged to make the government more open, more transparent, and more accountable. And a big part of that effort is the online presence of the federal government and the federal agencies, and that includes federal government websites. Federal government websites are really looking to embrace all kinds of new online technologies that the commercial sector has already rushed to embrace. And we think it's really important for agencies to be able to do that, but all the while they really need to be making sure that as they bring these new technologies on board, that they do so through the lens of privacy. So we set out to write this report to give some recommendations on how federal websites can use a new kind of technology, which is usually known as analytics. We called it measurement in the report, and do so in a really privacy-protective way.
Now, you write at the beginning of this report that this paper focuses on the practice of web measurement, the collection and analysis of Internet data that's reported in the aggregate and used for the purposes of understanding and optimizing web usage. Can you translate that for me into Francis language?
Sure thing. So we did call it web measurement. It's more often known as analytics, but we wanted to narrow the focus a little bit. But when we talk about analytics or measurement, it's basically about counting. So almost every commercial website uses analytics already, and essentially what it involves is being able to count and track how website users are experiencing the site, how many of them are visiting the site, which pages they're going to, whether they're a new visitor or they're a return visitor. And it's a really kind of simple set of tools that websites and website owners can use to do this kind of measurement. But it involves, to some extent, some tracking of visitors to websites, and that's where the privacy angle comes in, because if you're tracking what people are doing on your site, that means that you're collecting information about them, and that implicates privacy.
And, of course, the added angle in the federal government is that if you're collecting information and that's quantified or crystallized in some way, that becomes a federal record. And so I guess the real delicate part is if you have agencies collecting official federal records on citizens.
Exactly. So a lot of times the logs that are generated when people come and visit federal government websites, they do have some sensitive kinds of information in them. They collect your IP address, and if they're doing this kind of web measurement stuff, then they're probably also collecting a unique identifier per user. And if that unique identifier lasts for any period of time after you've left the website, that opens the possibility for the government to be able to create a profile of your usage and to track you in various ways. And so the fact that those kinds of data are getting transmitted means that agency websites need to be really careful about what they do with that data.
All right, you've got a list of six recommendations, primary recommendations that you make in this report. So let's just go through them, and I'd like you to expand on each one of these concepts for me. The first one is to use data only for measurement. What are some of the ways that maybe private sector companies are using this data for ways other than measurement?
So the important distinction and the reason why we coined this term measurement is because the way that we see it, there's a whole category of really useful stuff that web managers can do, which only involves aggregate data. So while you may be tracking people on an individual basis and you may need to identify them with a unique identifier, once you've seen them hit the website, you can roll that up into an aggregate report so that at the end of the month or the end of the week, the web manager gets a report about how many people visited the site and which page they went to and that sort of thing. But in the commercial space, there's not necessarily a distinction between that kind of aggregate reporting and profiling on an individual basis. So, for example, since you have identified people uniquely, when you see the same person again, you could give them personalized content specific to that user, and that's something you can't really do with aggregate data.
Mm-hmm.
So what we talk about in the use limitation recommendation is that really if federal websites decide that they want to use these measurement technologies, they need to make sure that they're only using the data collected for the measurement purpose and not for all these other kinds of things that they could in theory do just because by virtue of the fact that they collected the data.
So you're suggesting that it would not be appropriate for the agency, say I come onto a website and look up information about the swine flu, and they are able to track that that's what I was looking for. So you're proposing that they should not be able to then, if I come on for a different purpose, maybe a week later, that they should not be able to push information to me about the swine flu, or just that I'm not sure I'm tracking.
Yeah, so it's not, the idea isn't that the website shouldn't ever be able to do that.
Uh-huh.
But if you're saying, oh, we're collecting this data for a measurement purpose or for an analytics purpose, then you should use it for that purpose. If you want to use it for some other purposes, we might have to investigate what the kind of privacy risks and trade-offs are with respect to those other purposes and then provide a recommendation there. But we've limited ourselves to measurement here.
Okay.
And if the website is doing measurement, then they should just only use the data for that purpose.
Fair enough. I just want to make sure, because one of the big advantages, it seems to me, of the government moving into Web 2.0 is that they have, just as you know better than most people, just amazing storehouses of information. And a lot of times they have information that people don't even know they have. And it strikes me as an advantage if that information can be pushed out. So what you're saying is push the information out, but make sure that it's done in a way that people are aware of the fact that that may be the reason, the way that they're going to get this information.
Exactly.
Is that fair?
Exactly. And,
okay.
We tackled this analytics or measurement piece first because it's something that lots and lots of federal websites want to be able to use, but that doesn't mean that the same kind of model couldn't be applied to other uses of data and technology.
Understood. Got it. The second point is that you're suggesting that the agencies prominently disclose using web measurement tools. Why is that important to you?
Generally speaking, when we think about privacy, one of the main risks is that data collection is going on in secret, that people don't know about it. They don't know what's being collected about them or what's being done with that data. And so we make a recommendation, which is actually already present more or less in federal guidance on this issue, that federal agencies that are going to use web measurement, they just need to disclose what they're doing, what the technology is that they're using, if they have a commercial partner that they're using to afford them the solution, and they need to disclose that too. Generally, with a theme of transparency, we think web measurement should be transparent as well.
Do you think it would be efficient or even doable to have one central location for that kind of disclosure? I'm wondering for the sake of transparency, if one agency does it one way and another agency does it another way and a third agency does it a third way, it strikes me that it would be helpful at least to be able to go to maybe one website and at least see this agency does it this way, and this agency does it a different way, rather than each agency maintaining its own separate disclosure page or whatever on the website.
Yeah, I think actually there's a role for both. So I think, a lot of people will interact only with a certain agency or a certain sector of the government. So I still think it's important that, if you're going to a particular agency site, that they have a privacy policy there that explains their data collection practices and what they do to safeguard the data. But I also think that there could certainly be value in some sort of clearinghouse or comparison site where you can kind of mix and match the different policies and see how they differ or how they're similar similar across the agencies.
All right, we've got four more topics that you hit in this report, and we'll talk about those when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Alyssa Cooper, Chief Computer Scientist of the Center for Democracy and Technology, talking about their report in conjunction with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, open recommendations for the use of web measurement tools on federal government websites. We'll have it linked up on the in-depth page at federalnewsradio.com later this afternoon, and we'll be back to talk to Ms. Cooper a little bit more on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a moment.
My life changed suddenly. I became very ill. The doctor told me I had approximately 6 months to live.
6 years ago, LaDonna LaPosa was diagnosed with cancer.
One day, my husband got an out-of-state paper. And on the science page was a tiny little article about tests being done. By that time, I didn't have any strength left, but Novartis let me be in their clinical trial.
A patient will stop at nothing in their fight against cancer. It's that same determination that drives research at Novartis.
I took the medicine, and here I sit 6 years later.
Novartis is committed to helping doctors and patients like LaDonna fight cancer and live with cancer.
I've got to welcome two more grandchildren during these 6 years that I've been alive. I'm very blessed.
Novartis. Think what's possible.
Join J. David Reeves, National President of Blacks in Government, for The Big Experience every Thursday at 11 a.m. The Big Experience will cover issues that affect government employees but often go unnoticed, specifically within minority communities, like government career development, proposed and existing federal legislation, financial and retirement planning, and national events. Gain new perspectives and new insights on The Big Experience Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Federal News Radio and WTOP would like to congratulate the winners of the newly announced $50 billion Alliant Information Technology contract. This long-awaited announcement includes 59 companies. WFED and WTOP congratulate AirInc as one selected by the GSA. AirInc, whether you need air-to-ground, ground-to-ground, wireless, interoperable, or other communications solutions, AirInc goes the distance, providing the most flexible communications possible around the globe. For more on Alliant and the full list of winners, go to federalnewsradio.com.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
Software assurance and software security is more than simply a matter of buying the right tools and giving them to programmers. It takes management. Here's former White House cybersecurity advisor Paul Kurtz.
What we don't want to leave the impression is their tools are a panacea. That's not the case. You fundamentally have to develop code securely to begin with and then put in place the procedures to maintain its security throughout its life cycle.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Welcome back to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Alyssa Cooper, Chief Computer Scientist in the Center for Democracy and Technology, and we're talking about a report that they've released recently in conjunction with the Electronic Frontier Foundation called Open Recommendations for the Use of Web Measurement Tools on Federal Government Websites. In our last segment, Ms. Cooper, we talked about two of the suggestions that you're making to agencies: use data only for measurement and prominently disclose. The next on your list of suggestions is to offer choice. Talk about the kinds of choices that you want agencies to offer on their websites and maybe the manner in which they can offer them so that it's clear to citizens what they're choosing.
So as much as measurement is certain to be really, really helpful for web managers, we do think that some visitors to government websites aren't going to want to participate. They just don't they don't want to have their data involved, and we think that's a fair choice for them to have. So what we'd like to see websites do is to provide their visitors with a really simple on-off switch that they can see, you know, prominently on every page of the site where data is being collected for measurement, and that they can just click to turn it on or off depending on their preference about whether they want to have their data used for this analytics purpose.
This is an area, too, that points out the difference between the federal government and the private sector, because the private sector doesn't operate under the same relationships, I guess, that the federal government does. That is, when I go to Amazon, I don't technically own a piece of Amazon. As a taxpayer, I own a little piece, a teeny little piece of the federal government. And so it would seem that a citizen should have some say, where in a private sector, you know, customer vendor relationship, that's a whole different kind of deal.
Right. You wouldn't want access to government services to be conditioned on accepting this kind of thing, whereas, you know, for a private company, if they want to do that, it's certainly something they can do, and we've seen companies do it before. So it's definitely a big difference between private and public.
It's interesting that you frame it that way, too, because when most people, I think of a government service, they think of getting a Social Security check or applying for a grant, you know, receiving some tangible asset, I guess, but the information that you get from the National Weather Service about whether it's going to rain tomorrow or not technically is obtaining a service from the federal government.
Absolutely, and you're going to see more and more of those kinds of functions moving online too. So, you know, this is very much geared towards federal agency websites being able to offer more different kinds of services and information online, but, you know, still giving people the choice about how much data they want to have collected.
Okay. Next on your list of suggestions is to limit data retention. You write the individual level data collected for measurement purposes should be retained for no more than 90 days. I'm always curious about numbers like that because I wonder what makes 60 days or 120 days not comporting with your goals, what that you're suggesting.
So the 90-day number is essentially the industry best practice at the moment. There's been a lot of talk about data retention timeframes from the commercial search engines, and 90 days has sort of become this flashpoint number where the data that's collected is still useful for that time period in terms of securing the service and being able to do some fraud checks on whether certain visitors are trying to game the system. But it's also short enough that, you know, three months after it's been collected, then all that data goes away and really reduces the privacy risk because the logs aren't kept around really for longer than they're needed just to offer the service and secure it.
Now, one of the points that you make in this suggestion is that the retention time frame should be disclosed and so on, explicitly stated in commercial partner contracts. And as soon as I see the word contracts, my little ears go up, because that's another issue that we don't think about that can complicate the citizen government relationship, and that is that at some point, almost by necessity, because the agencies don't have the capability to do it always in-house, some of this information is going to be held by somebody who's working with the federal government but is a private sector entity.
Right. So you're exactly right. It's a little bit too high of an expectation that every government agency is going to be able to implement one of these analytics packages themselves. And there are some really great tools on the market that have benefited from you know, a long life of deployment and are already all over the web. And so it's certainly likely that agencies will partner with commercial entities to get some of this analytics in place. But when that does happen, we think the contract is an appropriate place to state terms like data retention, because if the agency is you know, being a good data steward and getting rid of all the data that they have after a short time frame, but the commercial partner is keeping it forever, then you are sort of still left with the privacy problem that you were you know, seeking to eliminate by having the data retention limitation in the first place. So we think it makes perfect sense that when you set down the line and say we're going to delete data after this date, that should apply to any entity involved in the collection.
Alyssa Cooper of the Center for Democracy and Technology. More on the way from
In-Depth. CNBC Radio. A mild rally for stocks today in a light volume day As traders head out early for the Memorial Day holiday weekend, the stock market will be closed on Monday. Right now, the Dow up 57 points at 8349, the S&P 500 with a 5-point gain, and the NASDAQ Composite advancing about 10 points. A court examiner has recommended that nearly 4,000 accounts at Stanford Financial Group be unfrozen. The accounts were frozen in February as investigators try to figure out whether the firm engaged in a massive Ponzi scheme. The White House says President Obama is not concerned about a possible cut in the AAA credit rating of the United States. The dollar is at a 2009 low on concerns that the credit rating might be cut. GM bondholders say they'll reject the automaker's current offer of wiping out the debt in exchange for a 10% equity stake. Crude oil up 11 cents at $61.16 a barrel today after hitting a six-month high earlier in the week. Peter Schack now, CNBC Radio.
Not long ago, using the Internet meant waiting for a connection, for a page to load or a download to complete, and progress bars. Lots and lots of progress bars. Welcome to Now. Equip your team with Sprint Mobile Broadband and instantly unleash the potential of the Internet from almost anywhere. They pop a Sprint Mobile Broadband card into their laptops, and they're up and running right now. Checking emails from the lobby? Check. Uploading or downloading some mammoth files in the back of a cab? Done. And because only Sprint has the most dependable 3G network, your crew gets what's most important to them whenever they need it, practically instantaneously. Instant Internet from virtually anywhere. Sprint, the Now Network. Get a free Ovation U760 by Novatel Wireless Mobile Broadband Card for your entire business team. Visit sprint.com/free card. Dependable based on third-party drive tests on data performance for top 50 markets. Offer valid through 6609. Excludes taxes. May require credit approval. $36 activation, 2-year agreement, and $200 early termination fee. Available for corporate liable accounts only. See store for coverage and other details.
This week on Meet the Innovators, brought to you by Google, we talk to Mark Ehlert. He's DAU's innovation evangelist.
Knowledge management, if it's kind of set in a stone silo, can look askance at social media as this unregulated, free-range kind of activity.
The Wild West.
That they don't quite get. So luckily here at DAU, they haven't looked askance at me. They've actually welcomed me into a lot of meetings, and that's great because one of the things that social media does is kind of explode the idea that knowledge actually is managed. So what we're dealing with now aren't, what's interesting is these aren't technology issues we're dealing with, but organizational design and change management issues.
There's been a lot of talk about Google for Government. What does this mean for your agency? Google offers innovative tools to help government make information more accessible, both to authorized employees and to the public. Visit google.com/federal to learn how easy to use Google products can help your employees work together, improving agency performance while reducing costs. Do more with less. Learn how at google.com/federal.
Newsmakers make news on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist.
About a year ago, the phrase, a Craigslist for service, popped up in the Obama platform. The idea is that a lot of people want to participate, want to help in this country, and the idea is how to use the web to bring people together in ways that make sense.
The Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking about web measurement tools on federal websites with Alyssa Cooper, Chief Computer Scientist for the Center for Democracy and Technology. Their organization's report, in conjunction with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, is called Open Recommendations for the Use of Web Measurement Tools on Federal Government Websites. Two more suggestions on this list that I'd like to talk about with you, Ms. Cooper. One is to limit cross-session measurement, and this one I struggled with a little bit. Federal agencies should only use cross-session measurement when single-session measurement cannot be used to obtain the same metric.
So the distinction that we're making here is that sometimes you go to a website and it kind of tracks you while you're on the site. You're clicking between the different pages and then you leave, and that's what we would call a session.
Okay.
And lots of federal websites are already doing some measurement within that single session. And generally speaking, single session measurement really doesn't raise the kinds of privacy risks that cross-session measurement does because it doesn't require any kind of unique or persistent tracking over time. Now, cross session measurement is where you do get a unique ID assigned to you, and then over time, the website can track you from visit to visit and potentially in between if it's using a third party. So what the recommendation is here is that you should only use cross-session measurement if you really need to use it. There are some kinds of metrics that can be gleaned only with single-session measurement. One example is what is called in the industry the bounce rate. So bouncing is when someone comes and hits your site and leaves right away because it was a mistake. They didn't really mean to go there. Mm-hmm. For websites, this is an important metric in case there's some sort of erroneous search term or something which is causing people to get to their site by accident. And for that sort of thing, you don't need cross-session measurement. All you need to do is measure if someone hits your site and leaves right away, well, let's count the number of times that happens. And so there's some other metrics that are like that, which really only require single session measurement. And if that's what the agencies are interested in, then they don't really need cross session measurement.
Is there some kind of problem with cross session measurement, or is there some type of what is the core privacy issue? Because I can envision some scenarios where it would be helpful for an agency or to know what information can be pushed out to people if they're able to check that this guy came on and he asked about swine flu and then came back a week later and wanted to know about malaria.
Right. So the recommendation isn't that agencies shouldn't use cross-session measurement, and certainly useful for a lot of things. But what we just want to do is to have the agencies conceive of, well, why are we doing this? Why are we trying to measure things? What are we trying to measure? And once that plan is laid out and they can figure out, oh, well, we do need cross-session measurement for this or that, then it's a fine thing to use. But it shouldn't just be the default tool that the agencies go to if they haven't really rationalized why they need it. And that's because the privacy risk is just higher when you're able to track people across time, when you give them this unique identifier that can be sent back time and time again when they come to visit the site. That notion of kind of invisible tracking and profiling comes into play much more so than when you're just watching people during a single session.
And so it seems to me that the intent of that suggestion is the same as the intent of the first suggestion, which is to use data only for measurement, and that is just do what you're going to do and don't mess with people's information any more than you really need to accomplish whatever your mission is, whatever your objective is for a particular goal.
Right. Okay. I mean, a lot of times when we talk about privacy, you'll see, especially in the private sector side, companies just collect everything. They just want everything. We're just going to take all this data and sit on it, and we're not really sure what we're going to use it for yet or why we thought we needed it, but it's definitely more useful for us to have it than to not have it.
Mm-hmm.
And for privacy, that's a very problematic approach because you're always trying to, limit risk, limit the amount of data that's collected and shared and used. And so we're trying to reverse that mindset a little bit and introduce this concept of just having a plan ahead of time. You know, why do you need it? What are you going to use it for? And limit yourself to that purpose.
All right. The last suggestion on your list is obtain third-party verification. Agencies engaged in web measurement and their partners should have their privacy compliance procedures regularly verified by their IGs, inspectors general, or a designated independent third party. You're no doubt familiar with the relationship in many cases between agencies and inspectors general. So,
right. So, the notion here is that it's always useful to have, someone looking over your shoulder to figure out if you're really complying with the procedures that you said you were. So we just thought that having that kind of verification or occasional review to make sure that, nothing has changed and that all the safeguards are in place would be a useful step for, engendering trust on the public side in terms of knowing that the agencies are actually doing what they say that they're doing.